Welcome to the next chapter of As the Story Grows. I'm Brian Patton. This week, we welcome Borders drummer Dan Hodson to the podcast. Borders released Bloom Season back on November 18th via Arising Empire Records. Yup, another Arising Empire band on the podcast. Arising Empire has become a label that I trust, and when I see a new release, I make sure to check it out because I've been a big fan of everything the label's released over the last 2 years. Dan talks about growing the scene in Lincoln, UK, the story of Borders picking their name, evolving their sound, metal elitism, and more. Bloom Season leans into the rapcore nu metal sound while having its roots in metalcore. It's a fun record, and I hope you guys give it a spin. Links will be in the show notes. I want to give a special shout out this week to our Spotify listeners. Last week was Spotify Wrapped Week, and I got to see the podcast numbers, and As the Story Grows was in the top 15% most shared podcast globally and in the top 10% of the most followed podcast. So thank you to those who listen and share the show. I appreciate it. Word of mouth is always the best way to grow something. Also in the show notes this week is a link to my 30 favorite EPs from 2022. There's also a link to a Spotify playlist. So check those out and enjoy. All right, I hope you guys enjoyed this week's chat with Dan Hodson from Borders.
Yeah, pretty good. It's Friday, you know, yeah. Finished work. I moved house like a month ago. I got like flat pack furniture like waiting for me downstairs. So I kind of want to stay here for as long as humanly possible. So I'm fine with as many questions as you want. Go crazy.
Okay. Well,
I see you're a drummer as well.
I am. Yeah. I'm nowhere near as talented as you are.
That's silly.
I really tried the double kick thing there for a while. I gave it a good go and I was like, I don't fucking have it. And I can't play very fast. So emote is.
That's cool. Yeah. I mean, I've had like, not like emo, but I've just had older drummers that will have like people come to our shows that are older and they'll be there with like they've literally brought like their 16-year-old teen son to like, oh, your first metal gig or whatever, and they'll like come over and they'll have like, you know, their shy son come over and be like, hello, and they're always like there's a couple that I've spoken to that are drummers and they're like older and they say all that kind of stuff and I'm just like, I have the same response like what I'd say to you as well. Like you can literally, if you want it to be some crazy 280 BPM blast beat monster, like it's just, you know, it's in your head really. It's how much you want to practice that and how much you're into that kind of style of music.
Yeah.
Which for me, to be completely honest, like I'm into my heavier stuff, but there is a limit of how passionate I am on the super crazy heavy stuff. And how much dedication I'm willing to put into becoming some 280 BPM blast machine? Because honestly, I'm not about that life. So
yeah,
that's not me.
Right. I'm just as happy to sit behind the kit and play along to the Hamilton soundtrack. So
yeah. No, that's like, cool.
That does it for me. Lincoln, UK. Paint me a picture about Lincoln, UK. Where is that located?
It's difficult. It's like a B town. No one's really heard of it, and it's been a real disadvantage for us. The band that was before us that have recently broken up, that were sort of like, I guess a bigger metal band, were called Martyr Defiled. They took us out on their farewell tour, and it was really heartwarming at the London show. They the vocalist Matt, who we're really friendly with, he did a speech and was like, these guys are from a town that nobody in this room is ever going to have heard of. You know, they've got all odds stacked against them. And it really does feel that way. that there's no music promoters. So if you want to put a show on, you have to do it 100% DIY. Oh, and it's very, very, very rare that you ever see anybody come through and play unless they're already like a big established, you know, we live off this kind of band. So it was really hard, especially in our earlier years, where we had, you know, we had no team, nobody knew who we were. And I was just there spamming emails out to any major city vaguely near where we were to try and just get our feelers out a little bit, because it's tough, you know. It's tough for any band, especially in this day and age with the amount of competition and all that kind of stuff, you know. But being from a city that no one's really heard of, it's really difficult. But we've managed to somehow generate some kind of a local following. So whenever we do play a show, we've so far the last two shows we played, we sold them out. So there's something going on there, but it's definitely an up and coming city from a all kind of perspective, not just music.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm looking at it on the map now and I'm like, okay, all right. Yeah. It's definitely not near anywhere super big.
No. It got a university maybe like 20 years ago. Wow. And before then, it if you saw a shop that was a chain, you'd be shocked, because it was just lots of independent, tiny little stores in the middle of kind of like nowhere. It was considered a bit of a backwards town, but yeah, it's growing and it's it'll get there, but yeah. I'll be probably in my 80s by then. So I won't be playing drums anymore, but you know, it'll get there.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that where you grew up?
Yeah. Yeah. I grew up in Lincoln. Yeah. And the guitarist in Borders as well, he also grew up in Lincoln. And the two of us went to school together, and that's kind of what got Borders to be where it is now, I guess.
Awesome. Awesome. What got you into music?
Like an individual band or just...
Like as a fan and then wanting to play drums, yeah?
Yeah. It seems like such a straightforward question, but there's quite a few things. Like when I was like way younger, I had a guitarist friend of mine, and we're talking like I was like 12, maybe early teens. Mm-hmm. And my guitarist friend was like, hey, you should check out this drum video, it's crazy. It's like, cool. Wasn't a drummer. Like, there's no real reason why he would show me this, but he just thought that it was cool. So he showed me, and it was Joey Jordison's solo from ages ago. At the time, I was like, that's cool. He goes upside down, crazy lights. Everyone's loving it. Sounds really fast. Sweet. And that's what got me into the idea of checking out the band Slipknot, which I'll be completely honest, at the time, it was a bit like, this is maybe a bit too heavy to begin with. I think that everybody starts off with most people that are listening to crazy stuff, you know, like Infinite Annihilator and really like mega OTT crazy heavy music. Yeah. They all started off with like Limp Bizkit or, you know, The Offspring or something. If they're being truthful, I don't think anyone goes straight in at Thy Art Is Murder. I just don't believe it. I just don't think anybody does that. I listened to Slim. I was like, nah, this is okay, but maybe a little bit too heavy. And then, you know, back in the day, Kerrang and Scuzz and things like that on TV was popular, and I just started listening to that. And which is, you know, your more sort of, I guess, mainstream rock stuff at the time. Slipknot were at their probably, arguably, peak of heavy. Yeah. And then once I'd settled in with that a bit, I then started to go back to Slipknot and was like, yeah, this is cool. But I think, like, to answer your question, because I'm going off on a bit of a tangent, rock and metal in general, like the drums in that is just really hard hitting, really fun. The guy behind the kit always looks like he's having a great time. And that just really appealed to me. And then when I started to play and I got to, you know, even like a, I can keep a beat kind of level, I called my friend in that I was talking about earlier that I went to school with, who we since made Borders with. And, you know, we'd be like, let's try and play covers. And it was an absolute mess, but it was fun. So he'd come over to mine and have like an electric kit and an amp and stuff, because there's no way the neighbors would allow an acoustic set.
Right.
And we'd sit there like smashing out the worst Kill Switch Engage covers you've ever heard in your life. But it was super fun. And I was like, yeah, this is something that I want to do. This makes me feel, you know, like I can't really explain it. Nothing else makes me feel as happy as when I'm playing the drums. But now I'm playing with my guy and we're having a sick time. And it probably doesn't sound that great, but we're having a great time. Imagine if we got good at this. So we just did that, pushed it, and that's where we're at now. And it feels crazy because next year will be 10 years of Borders running. Wow. And that's such a long period of time saying it out loud. But the amount of progress that we've made year on year, it hasn't slowed down. You know, we've gone from being a really tiny band in the middle of nowhere that nobody's heard of, with no team, with nobody that will respond to our emails for, you know, a show for free in some decent city nearby, because just nobody really cared about us. And now we've got, you know, we've got a really great booking agent based in the UK that has a strong presence in the US. We've got a US-based manager. We've got a really great label based in Europe. And it's crazy looking back and seeing how it all started when I was a younger teenager with the guitarist in Borders, Gav, up to the point that we've got to now.
Yeah. As you started to get older and get into the music and into the scene, were you like heading out to like Sheffield or Nottingham? Were there scenes there that you could plug into and see bands, or was it all just like listening at home and like trying to create your own scene?
It was a little bit of both, because we tried to keep playing in Lincoln very limited, because we figured that, and we went really hard. Like we'd pay a bunch of money for a decent sound guy, a decent light guy, a decent venue, and then we would genuinely wander about with flyers begging shops to let us stick flyers in their windows. We'd go around flyering you know, every weekend for a month in the lead up to a show. This is how we sold out these shows. It's not because everybody in Lincoln just somehow knew who we were. We just worked really hard because we were in Lincoln to do everything that we could to just throw the Borders name in front of everybody's face. And it's paid off, because, as I say, you know, the last two shows that we've played sold out, and that was with much lesser effort. But we're planning on doing the same. We're going back to our roots with hardcore traditional and digital marketing for this album show that we've got in Lincoln. But in terms of the surrounding cities, yeah, I mean, you know, we piled it up hard with all the promoters. We piled it up hard with all of the local bands. We just did everything that we could to try and make a name for ourselves in the surrounding cities that were, you know, more established and had a bigger population and had bigger tours run through them. And it was a very, very, very slow burner, because there's lots of bands doing the same thing. But, you know, if you're persevering hard and you're, you know, really grinding it out there, then eventually it pays off. Borders Kit. So originally we were called, this was the first suggestion, Truth of a Liar. And I was like, nah, that's an August Burns Red song, right? Everybody knows that. we can't do that. Okay. But that was almost set in stone. I'm pretty sure we have like an unlisted Facebook page somewhere with that name written on it. Borders, that came out because we put a long list of names together and went, at the time, yep. And I'm being totally honest with you, because I could sit here and I could tell you something about the borders between I don't know, humanity and differences in people and all this kind of stuff. But no, that's legit. It's not it's not what we did, right? We legit. And I'm fully convinced that 99% of bands, when they tell you the meanings behind their band names, they've made up a story, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to be real with you. We put a name, we put like, I don't know, 30 names together. And we were like, cool, which one do we collectively think is the best one? And we were like, yeah. Cool. No one's taking that. That looks like a good name. We can make a good logo out of that. Seems memorable. Sweet. Let's stick with that. So I came up with the name. So my one won. I think we all put like 10 different names in. And that's the one that came out in the end.
How'd you guys end up with Long Branch Records?
Long Branch. Okay. So we got on a tour. It was actually the band that I was referring to earlier in the interview, Marta Defiled, that were the sort of predecessor of us that went off and did some crazy stuff. They were a really heavy band. They were a deathcore band. They did their farewell tour, and we'd made a good impression on them. They'd seen the amount of effort that we put into our local push. And at the time, we were, you know, just grinding any show anywhere and everywhere. And we were starting to get a bit of our name for ourselves. We managed to land a Whitechapel show in London, which was crazy. It sold out. It was nuts. And we got really good reviews from press off of that. And I think that was the final hitter, where Marta Defiled basically said, we are going to do a farewell tour. We can pick two bands. We want you guys to come. And I don't know if you're familiar with them, because they're no longer together, but Shields were the main support band at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So we went out on our first European run, and Shields at the time was signing to Long Branch, and the label rep was at one of the shows. So we didn't even know that the guy was there, but we just played as hard as we do every night. To be honest, I think this was one of the lesser busy shows on the tour. But regardless of people, we always go hard, and he was really, really impressed with our live performance, went and checked out our music. And then our manager at the time got an email the following day saying, hey, let's start talking. And it just went from there.
How did COVID, the lockdowns, affect the band?
It was great. It was, you know.
Sure. I mean, yeah.
it was. It had pros and cons. Like, it kind of forced us to be a bit more regimented with how we were in terms of being organized, and you know, we'd have to like schedule like a Skype call and sit down and be like, right, cool, let's try and write. And that was just a complete flop. It didn't really work. We came across a tool called Audio Movers, where you can basically bring up a project and you can just all listen in to the project, but you're also on Skype at the same time. So we used that a fair amount, but there was a dip in COVID and we hadn't seen each other in person for a good year, I would say. So we were really excited. So we just went a bit crazy and booked a getaway in the UK, sort of like in a picturesque like farm fields, lakes, you know, like proper in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
That's where we wrote NWWM, Suffer and Fate of Black, that are three of the singles that we've currently released, so arguably some of the stronger songs on the album. Yeah. And we just smashed those out in less than a week. But we did it because we were just in such a great headspace. You know, we were hanging out together again. We were writing music together again. And it was really good. COVID definitely had a negative effect on what we were doing. But, you know, it's the same for every other band. I've seen lots of bands that are our size or a bit bigger or you know, even a bit smaller, that COVID just broke them and they're just not together anymore, because they forgot what it was like to enjoy the fun aspect of being in a band once COVID wasn't there anymore. And thankfully, we're starting to come out at the end of that. So, yeah.
And sometime along there, you ended up with the Rising Empire. How'd that relationship come about?
That came about because we'd got maybe like two tracks together at the time. No, three tracks, sorry. We got three tracks together, and they were demos and self-produced demos. So they were, you know, we would never put them anywhere for anyone really to listen to. But I got chatting to our manager, Ollie at FM Management, and it was because he'd put us on a tour with A Virtue, which is another band that he manages, but it all came to a halt because of COVID. You know, I just reached out to him and started chatting with him and, you know, saying that it was unfortunate that all this had happened, etc. And, you know, just as you do with anybody else that's, you know, in a band or in the industry or a fan or anybody, you know, we were just chatting and being friendly and we just clicked really well and we got along really well. And a week deep, I was like, I've got this song, it self-produces, sound very good. I don't really want to risk it. Am I blowing my load early? I don't know. But I was like, oh, whatever. It'll be fine. It'll be fine. We get along. We'll see how this goes. So I gave him a lot of preempt and was like, bro, right. Please don't judge this. Okay. This isn't even a pitch. Okay. I just want your opinion. Okay. On the sly. So I sent that over to him, which was Fade to Black. And he really liked that song. It sounds very different to our previous stuff. So because he liked it so much, you know, he dug a little deeper into what we were doing and what we were planning and how serious we were about the project. And he took us on, and having taken us on, that's when things started to really start moving. So we were self-managed. I essentially acted as a manager for the band before, whereas Ollie, you know, he's like a bazillion steps above me in terms of knowledge and contacts and all that kind of stuff, and it was a little bit overwhelming. But he was like, yeah, cool, all right, sweet, I'm gonna pitch you to these guys, this is what's gonna happen. And Arising were his top pick for our sound and what we've got going on and where we're based and all that kind of stuff. And fortunately, he's got a great relationship with them. He's got some bands that are currently signed with them as well under his management. Arising really, really liked our sound. So we've just hit the ground running, really, sort of during the pandemic with our new agent, our new manager, and, you know, fairly recently our new label. So we're really excited to see where that goes.
Nice. That's rad. The record's called Bloom Season. Where'd that title come from?
Bloom Season came from both sort of musical and personal. So musical in the sense of we've bloomed into a new sound. We are still metal, we've still got those riffs, but we feel that if you were to listen to the Purify album and then listen to Bloom Season, it's almost as if you're listening to different bands. So we see it as a name that almost implies that we've blossomed into something new. And in terms of sort of personal, we feel like, and you know, it's the same for everybody else, and I'm sure this has been said a bazillion times already, so I'm very self-aware of how generic this sounds, but I think people have come out of COVID, you know, different. They've got a different mentality towards lots of things, and don't take things for granted maybe quite as much as they did before. And there's a lot of stuff that we reference and talk about in the album that are struggles that we had just in general when we were younger, but also moving through the pandemic and turning into the people that we are now. And that's more obvious in some songs than others. So we felt that Bloom Season was a strong representative title for our own sort of personal experience with having started and ended the album, all the way up to the actual sound itself.
it's interesting to hear you say that you think if people listen to Purify and then the new stuff, it will seem like a different band. So I listened to the new record a few times. I dig it a lot. And then I went back through the discography. And so for me, I could hear like, okay, there are things happening on Purify that directly, like you can see the evolution, even listening to Diagnosed. There's a part on Analyst where like, there's like a screamed rap. It's very short, but I'm like, okay, you can hear there's some like this new metal hip hop element still in there, even back then. So it's interesting.
Yeah, no, totally. And like we were a little bit worried, to be honest, because you get a lot of elitism in the genre of metal. Yeah. You know, so when we I know exactly what you mean about Analyst, and that was a lot more subtle. But in War and Purify, that was incredibly rap heavy, but without the amount of production behind it. So it was essentially very much like metalcore song, but with rap over it. And I think it worked. It felt like the tiniest bit shoehorned, in my opinion anyway. But when we put that song out, we were really, really worried about how people might perceive it. Like, are you being a bit of a try-hard? Because at the time, rap metal was becoming more popular in the UK. So it was like, oh, are they hopping on a trend? You know, what are they doing? Are they, if you could even call it selling out at our level, probably not. But we were worried about how, you know, the reception off the back of that song. But people loved it. It's one of the most successful songs on the album. So we were like, well, we love it. We enjoy it. Let's just lean into it and see what happens. And we did that. And we got a producer on board that was just a crazy visionary for the sound that we were going for, to the point where we would write songs that we were worried about. We were like, does this work with the rap? Not sure. And we give it to our producer and he would just somehow wizard it into being some kind of like, yeah, like he'd turn it upside down. He'd give it back to us. We'd work on it some more and then we give it back to him, and it was great. And now we're in a position where we feel like, and I know it's a really massive, very, very, very bold statement, but if I'm being if I'm referring to the UK specifically, maybe not global, because I feel like there are more US bands that are metal and rap. I feel that in the UK there's not as much of that. I feel like it's much more of a breakthrough genre, and I don't think that, to my knowledge anyway, I don't think there's any bands in the UK that have the sound that Bloom Season has got.
Yeah. It's almost like a throwback to a lot of that late 90s, early 2000s, like nu metal, especially like the heavier side, the Slipknots and like Korn and Biscuit. But like, it's still a super fucking heavy record. Like, it still slams in their breakdowns and like... Nobody's going to look and be like, they're a nu metal band now, because you guys are definitely not a nu metal band.
Yeah. I mean, we pull a lot of influence from that because, you know, again, going back to the earlier part of the interview, like I eventually ended up on Slipknot and their much heavier stuff as well, because that progression just continued. But, you know, Limp Bizkit was up there for me. They were, you know, one of the first bands that got me into heavy music. Linkin Park, obviously, everyone. Everyone that likes rock or metal has to like Linkin Park. It's the law. So it's quite cool to be this far on and have a much sort of broader taste in terms of rock and metal, but be in a band where we're trying to kind of like make a modern twist on, you know, your classic 90s metal sounding bands. It's great. I love it.
Yeah. It's super rad. You talked about like, you know, kind of gatekeeping in metal a little bit. Like, do you, my opinion as someone in the States has been like, fans in the States are very much like really gatekeeping and like, this is death metal, this is deathcore, this is metalcore. And if you stray from the box, like the new Architects record that just came out today, people are just like, fuck Architects, they've gone, you know, butt rock, right?
Yeah.
Like, where I feel like in the UK, it's more like, people who love metal like just the umbrella of metal and all that encompasses it. Do you find it different being over there?
Where did you get that from?
I feel like the sounds I'm hearing from bands in the UK, or there's more experimentation, there's more pulling in other influences from, and it seems to be more accepted. Maybe I'm full of shit. I'm in America. Who knows?
No, I don't know. I think honestly, I think it is kind of across the board. Unfortunately, maybe because I'm a little bit older now. Because if I'm being completely honest, if you asked me when I was 17 years old, if I was an elitist metalhead, right. That's what I was, that guy. Okay. It's taken me a few years to stray away from that. And I am very much not that guy anymore. But I think, I don't know whether it's an age thing or a cultural thing or what, but yeah, there is a lot of elitism still. I mean, you know, Architects are a UK based band.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. As you said, you know, they're getting a bunch of hate for their new release, but it's always a big conversation. You know, it's like, well, bands are naturally going to change their sound. It's just mm-hmm. what's going to happen. And, you know, the people that got into that band with their initial releases are obviously going to be a bit butthurt off of the back of that. But, you know, Architects don't exist purely for the first 3 years of fans that they generated. You know, they're doing what they love. They're doing what they enjoy. They're doing what music they think sounds good. And it's clearly working out. They're only getting bigger every year, so unfortunately I don't think that's just a UK based mentality, and it is quite sad because if I ever go to a metal show, I might be a little bit biased, or if I talk to anybody that's into that kind of music, in itself it's a little bit niche. Mm-hmm. They're always, you know, super friendly, crazy down to earth, you know, considerate people, but there seems to be that one niggling thing where if you don't like my subgenre of metal, then I'm not sure if I can hang out with you. And it's I think it's a very small group of, you know, people within the sort of metal and rock community. But you know, we can't have everything, can we? We've got to have a little bit of negativity with all that positivity.
I mean, there are people mad that Lorna Shore is popular, and I'm like, they're so fucking heavy. Why are we bad? Like, we should be happy for them.
Yeah, no, I don't understand that either, because I watched you know, Punk Rock NBA.
Yeah,
did you watch that? Yeah. So I watched that whole video on Lorna Shore, and they've gone through some like bad stuff. You know, the amount of like lineup changes and fighting the odds and all that kind of stuff. It was super interesting, and it's like, well, you know, again, being super biased because I'm in a metal rap band, but I feel like, I don't know, would. Is everybody that's a fan of music of other genres that dedicated and that passionate about the genre? Because that's the thing that I found within the metal and rock communities. They are very, very, very dedicated and passionate about it, you know? And these guys, to have stuck through all of that, and that's only scratching the surface of what would have been going on internally with them.
Yeah.
In terms of finances and, you know, stuff like that, that really is a behind the scenes thing that happens with bands. It's quite crazy that they've gone through all of that. So it's really, really good to see that it's, you know, well and truly starting to pay off for them. Yeah, so I think the reason why you might have been given the 11th is because that's the first show that we'll be playing on the run. So we're not trying to push this as a tour. We're trying to sort of push it as individual release shows. So we're doing a Friday to Sunday, and then the following week we're doing another Friday to Sunday. So we're just playing six shows total across the UK, primarily in bigger cities, including our hometown. So we're going to begin in our hometown in Lincoln. On the 11th, and then we're covering Leeds, London, Birmingham, and Manchester. And that's to really just go through the new set for the first time to whoever wants to come and check it out. And we're going to have our first physical releases on sale. We're super excited about it. We haven't done a headline run in years. So to play headline shows in itself is quite a big deal for us. We're excited to see the reception off of the back of these singles that we've been putting out, and to hopefully project ourselves, you know, further forward and get more opportunities. But in terms of this year, that's all that we've got for the time being, but we've not got many months left, do we?
Yeah.
We're really, really, really excited about this. It's been the hardest album that we've written, but it's equally the most exciting one that we've ever written. And we can't wait to put it out to the world and see what you guys think.
Thanks for listening to As the Story Grows. Our intro music was written and composed by Jeremy Hunt. The As the Story Grows theme is by Bob Nana. If you like what you hear, subscribe wherever you get your podcast and give us a rating and review. If you'd like to support the show financially, you can join us at patreon.com/asthestorygrows. Be a part of our community and join the ongoing conversation over on Discord. If you enjoy this episode, share it on social media with your friends. Much appreciated, and thanks for listening.